This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulscher.
Wait, yay! Wade's got the boar. What's up, amigo? How are you, man? Welcome back, Wade. How you doing there, sir?
Just reminding myself what these buttons do.
I think if you take the one and you like slide it up a little bit, then somebody
Everything
might hear me.
Works better. Is that?
Yeah, and I can actually hear myself now. Matt, I like you a lot better than Paul. Man, I'm going to have to talk to that Paul about that board thing.
He's probably setting the levels properly, though.
Yeah, well, and then there's that. All right, White in the House, what's your baby? It's Rich O'Tea. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great.
Welcome. All righty. And we got a very special guest with us. Yay! We got Morgana Ray, and I think I'm all cried out now after that last rant. And, first time I read that, I didn't know if I was actually going to be able to read it, that story of Jerrica Bull in there. But
Does that classify as a rant?
It doesn't. Is it a rant?
I don't know.
It's more
That's
of
a bonus. It's
a bonus rant.
Bonus cry
kind of thing here. All right, very cool. So we've got an interesting show here as we're going to be reinventing business mistakes with Matt Turner, and Matt is actually calling us internationally, and I think we're going to do a little something here on Skype. Are we not there? So Matt, are you with us?
I'm here, man. Can you hear me from the land of the UK?
Yeah, land of the UK. There you go, man. Yeah, all good. So in your picture, you look about 14. I assume you're a little bit older than that based on all the things you've done in your career. So give people a little rundown of who you are. And I know you just came out with the book, man. So tell folks about that as well.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I do. I need to update my pictures. I was actually just on a call with Chris Brogan yesterday, and he was like, you need to update your pictures. You look very different. I've got a big mustache now, and my hair's long, so I need to get on new pictures. I'm for the most part a writer. I love storytelling, and I've been writing a book called The Success Mistake, which Steve, you feature in oh so kindly. I've been working on it for around about 4 years, and I finally launched it last month, so it's been an incredible journey. Yep. And as well as that book, I work with certain companies on brand storytelling. I've written a few novels too, but pretty much everything I do surrounds the notion of narrative and story. And the journey I've gone through personally over the last couple of years, interviewing 163 people about their greatest mistake and how they turned it into their best success. Yeah, well, I've learned really a great deal about how to transform, I suppose, mistakes into success and mm-hmm. failure into something of opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And so how do you define success and how do you define failure, just out of curiosity?
Well, I think I kind of liken success to an individual's faith. I feel like we quite often will go towards something that is quite sort of generic, you know. So I feel we for a long time go towards what people, you know, define what success is. So people say, all right, well, you know, if you own a business that turns over a few million, you're successful. If you drive a particular kind of car, you're successful, and so on. But I think success, and indeed failure too, being its opposite, is a very personal thing. And I think you need to kind of take a step back and just ask the question, actually, what does success mean to me? What makes me happy? What makes me free? What makes me fulfilled? Mm-hmm. So for me personally, success is to, you know, escape money's shackles. And I don't mean that in a sense of having so much I don't have to worry about it. I mean, I don't want to think about money in my mm-hmm. daily day. I want there to be enough where I know I can, you know, survive and thrive, but I'm not then wanting to get greedy and want more for the sake of wanting more. Yep. And I'm not there yet. And one of the great things I've discovered on this journey is that it's part of the journey. Mm-hmm. You don't particularly necessarily want to reach success too early, because then what comes after it? And I suppose it's a constant sort of iteration and mouse chasing cats or other way around. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, because we actually just had this conversation in the last hour there. And the question is, all right, so you've talked to 163 entrepreneurs for this book. This is a successful mistake, and really interesting title on that as well. But let me ask you this. If you had to choose, now that you talked to 163, I'm sure you've talked to hundreds more over the years, and you've had this conversation with a lot of different folks. If you had to choose between love or money, and you couldn't have both, but you can only have one, which would you take? Would you take the love or would you take money?
It's such a tricky one, isn't it? I'd like to think I would choose love. every time because there's something wonderful and special about love.
That's like what people want you to. That's what people want you to say, right? I mean, that's like the politically correct answer. Right? So be honest. It would be money, right?
Well, only because I know just how much worry no money creates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think it's all relative because I think if you ask someone who is later in life, they might have a kind of different sort of outlook on things because they know just how sort of insignificant money can play. But I think it's so relative depending on the situation that you're in, because if you've got no money, as in you are struggling to eat, you are struggling to provide food on your family's table and everything,
mm-hmm.
all the love in the world, you know, you're trying to survive, you're trying to literally live.
Mm-hmm.
And as an animal, I mean, human beings are basically animals and we are bred, like, we are here to survive and to reproduce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I hear
and
you, man.
In this day and age, for the most part, you need a certain amount of money to do that. I mean, obviously you can do it, you know, living off the land and whatnot, you know, if you build your own shack in the wilderness. I mean, but for the most part, in society being what it is, you need a certain degree of money to live, to survive, and to thrive enough where you can reproduce. And I think that's kind of like our go-to thing. Like, that is our minimal thing as a human being,
mm-hmm.
you know, to survive long enough to reproduce. So in that sense, if you had a choice between money or love, to a certain degree, you need to kind of have enough money to survive. But I think once you get enough where you're able to do those things,
mm-hmm.
that is when love should take over, because money won't build you happiness. It won't provide you a great deal. And I spoke to a lot of people who, they made a lot of money. I mean, Steve, you're absolutely one of them, you know, speaking to you and going through different iterations through your life, you know, how much money you have doesn't define you and your happiness and where you are. And sometimes actually less money can, you know, free people.
Yeah.
And it's once they let go of that, that's when, you know, the real kind of love can come in. So it's such a difficult question. And I don't think there is a particularly right answer.
Yeah.
Like you say, the political correct one is love. You choose it because that's what you're supposed to say.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like that's all what we do want to say. We want to say that, but there's that kind of fear that money has that cling over us where we're like, okay, we can't just completely forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping one day that I get to a level where I only ever really think about money when I meet my accountant every couple of months, and I don't really think about it, mm-hmm. you know, either in a sort of worry, anxious kind of way, like, do I have enough? But also in a longing, greedy kind of way. Ooh,
yeah.
If I could just release this extra book or do this, I could earn an extra 10%. Because what the hell does an extra 10% mean if you're already happy and if you're already fulfilled and you have everything you need?
Yeah, I mean, reality is you're always going to draw that line in the sand. I mean, there's always going to be sort of that, you know, I got a million in the bank and that's great. Now I need two, and you get that two, and now you need 10, and then you get that 10, and you need 2. I mean, I don't think there's ever going to be a point where you just stop. Either you have it in you to just kind of be that entrepreneur and just kind of keep trying to churn, or you don't. But I will ask you this, man, which is 163 people. That's a really fucking odd number, dude. How'd you come up with like 163? Like, where did that come from?
Well, I was doing being at Views for quite a while, and I always wanted to get up to like at least 100.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to 100, and then I thought, you know what? I didn't do them all as sort of face-to-face or over Skype. Some of them were through email. So I thought, I want to have like at least 100 recorded interviews. And I kind of got to that number and I wanted to kind of round it up. So I thought, well, let's get to 150.
Yeah, you see, that's what I'm talking about. It's like you get to that line in the sand,
yeah.
and you're just like, ah, fuck it, I'm going to keep going. And it's like you never stop. I mean, this is like, you could have had like 12 books here, dude. Instead, you just shoved all of us into one book.
No, you just said, I got to actually sell this book and make some money. I better stop.
4 years into it, man. I assume you have a day job. Like you flip burgers at McDonald's, or what are you doing during the day?
Well, for the most part, I sort of focus on my own stuff, like the books. But like I say, I do client work with brand storytelling, so I don't have a day job as such. But you know, I've had them, but yeah, I kind of mix up with client work too. But it's interesting that you say that. Why I kept on wanting an extra number, I wanted to do it, and that actually that kind of mentality taught me a lot on what my sort of current sort of aspirations towards success are, because I realized actually, although having a large number for the book, 163, is cool and it makes it stand out against other books. And it's certainly a selling point. It, you know, 163 or 63 or 23, that doesn't really matter. It's the quality that kind of goes into it. Mm-hmm. So doing that and going through that process actually helped me realize that, you know, we quite often, and I'm very guilty of this, you know, we go after quantity without taking a step back and thinking, well, what is the worth in this quantity? And, you know, where is the sort of sacrifice of quality within that?
Yeah.
So I mean, I eventually put a line in.
And let's be honest, though. I mean, there's 163 people in there. There's at least 16, 20, maybe even 30 people that really just shouldn't be in that book at all. I mean, so just name like if you could go back right now, like name like three people that you should absolutely just scratch from the book. Like if you're going to do like a version two of this thing, like just go ahead, just name like three people you should absolutely take out of that book.
Yeah. And you can say Steve.
Yeah. I can be one of those.
No, I disagree with that. I think everyone who's in that book, you know, I think they belong. I mean, I suppose a couple of them who've since kind of left the world of entrepreneurship to get a job.
Well, it took you four fucking years to write the book, man. You did those interviews, you know, 4 years ago.
Then, I know,
you
right?
know, it's, I mean, by that time, you know, in the entrepreneur land, you're going to have people who, you know, who absolutely aren't going to make it until the book was actually published. But that's pretty funny. All right. So 163, we'll be going over some of these successful mistakes and whatnot and talking about some interesting stuff here. As we talk to the Turn Dog Millionaire himself, Matthew Turner, here on Reinvention Radio. And I'm going to let Morgana, you're going to take, like, this whole next segment, this is like you. This is all Morgana all the time on this next. You ready?
All right.
All right, sweet. All right, more Reinvention Radio right after this.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're at a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Ulcher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step by step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many get on the right path and be clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step for realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting TheReinventionWorkshop.com today. No more delays, no more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to TheReinventionWorkshop.com. That's TheReinventionWorkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulcher.
All right. Welcome back to another edition here of Reinvention Radio. I am Steve Ulcher. Hi, Morgana. What's
Hi.
Going on?
Just figuring out who's here.
Everybody's here. White Wade, Rich Ote, Morgana Ray. I'm Steve. Nice to meet you. Welcome. Welcome. Hi. And we got Matthew Turner on the line joining us internationally from the good old UK. Matt, you still there?
He's still here, man. Still right. here.
So when did the book officially come out?
The book came out sort of the early parts of June. So it was, what, 4th of June? So it's been out about 6 weeks now. It's been a real labor love, and it was a proud moment to get it out there.
Yeah, I bet, man. And so appreciate the shout-out there in the description on Amazon. It features the likes of Chris Brogan, New York Times bestselling author, Rachel Ellenaw, BBC Dragon Den investor, Mitch Joel, media visionary, blah, blah, blah. And many other inspiring thought leaders. So, evidently, I would be under the many other inspiring thought leaders, and that's good because I consider myself to be an inspiring thought leader. That's it. That's exactly how I would describe myself as well. So, thank you for that. All right, very cool,
You're
man.
You're most welcome.
All right. So, biggest lesson learned. All right. So, you talked to 163 people. The successful mistake. What are some of the more common business mistakes that you heard in talking to all of these various folk? I mean, that's a lot of folk to talk to. What are some of the more common themes that you heard? And I mean, give us something like, I mean, don't give us the same old bullshit. I mean, like really, like let's go to something like people haven't heard of before, because there's a lot of like entrepreneurs and solopreneurs and wannabepreneurs that listen to the show. So like, give us something like fresh and meaty.
Well, I mean, I think probably the most common thing about people, and I feel like pretty much every single business owner actually needs to make this mistake in order to move forward is surrounds hiring. That's probably the thing that came up the most in all the interviews was the hiring mistakes. But I suppose my favorite part of a process wasn't so much the actual mistake, but what some of my favorite entrepreneurs did after making a mistake. And it's something that I think takes a really incredibly brave person to do, and it's to literally walk away from the situation. So I met quite a few people who something really bad would happen, whether it's, you know, their business going bankrupt or, you know, just something kind of a shit hitting fan. And rather than then going straight back into it and getting another job or starting up a business, which I suppose is what everyone would assume you would do, like your friends, your family, and, you know, most sort of people say you got to get straight back in there. The ones which I found get the greatest success and allowed them to, well, I suppose, figure out what is their what, which is a subject you know all about, is literally walking away and taking a trip to Mexico. I mean, Corbett Barr was one of them. He took like a 6-month trip to Mexico weeks after his business went under. And mm-hmm. I remember when I first started doing these interviews, I just couldn't fathom it. I was like, wait, your business goes under, you are in debt, you know, you're owing your investors, like, it's a bad time. Like, I can't really imagine anything worse than you losing your business. And yet the thing you do, rather than getting straight back into the saddle and trying to right that wrong, fix that mistake, you take time away to go on a trip with your wife so you can see the world. But
maybe
now,
they're just trying to write that off in their bankruptcy before it's closed out.
Well, maybe. Yeah, that's absolutely true. But I don't know. I found that the people who found the greatest clarity were the ones who made a really brave decision, at least in my opinion, of just taking a complete step back, walking away from the situation. And Corbett Barr actually said it better than I ever could. He basically said, I knew that if I stayed, I would just come up with a decision, but I needed to escape in order to figure out what the right decision mm-hmm. is. So I find that was probably like my favorite takeaway from it. It wasn't necessarily the mistake as such, but when a really bad thing happens, and it doesn't have to be, you know, losing your business, it could be, I don't know, just a project not going well or a launch or something that costs you a lot of money. But rather than just trying to right that wrong and make a bit of a panic buy, you know, take a step back, whether it's an hour's walk or a month in Bali, it doesn't really matter. That's kind of a brave decision. That's when I found people making the best sort of decision on the back of it.
I use that all the time as a sales pitch for my retreats in Bali.
Which is what?
My money goddess retreat in Bali is when you take yourself out of your culture, out of what is familiar to you, you see things. You see things differently. You don't have the same consciousness, and you can come back with a much bigger mm-hmm. perspective.
Mm-hmm. Can we get Wade over to Bali real quick?
I know. We're looking at a new studio space, and so you decided that the studio's going to be in Bali, yeah?
WS Radio East.
WS Radio, yeah, I like that. Is that West or East?
Well,
that's a SpongeBob thing. If you haven't ever seen that,
Olivia? I don't let her.
You don't let her watch SpongeBob?
Not until she chooses to do it on her own. What, you know? If you don't want them to eat sugar, don't bring sugar in the house.
Oh my God, I am so.
Hey, there's going to be times she's going to be so influenced by everybody else. I'm giving my time this time.
Hey, here's what I should do. I should write a book about the successful mistakes of parenting. Like, there we go. So all right, so Matthew, you're onto something now, man. So you got the successful mistake, like in general.
We got a series now.
And now, we need 164 interviews.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Bigger.
We took it to the next level. We just really blew things out of the water, 164. Yeah.
No, man. I'm going to play it like golf. I'm going to try and lower the score from now on.
Is that the plan?
So that's my plan, to kind of go under 163.
Yeah.
So that's the next time.
Yeah, I mean, let's
lower
be honest.
The score.
You got Brogan in that book. I don't think Brogan needs to be in the next one. So at least we'll start to chip away at it from
one
at a time. All right. So let me ask you this. So if there's somebody who's just starting out, they're thinking about, look, you know, I want to get into business, I want to do my own thing. As you look at some of the feedback that you got from all of these interesting folks that you talked to, what are like some of the key things, like name maybe three key things that if these folks could start over, do things differently, do things, you know, I guess in a better way, what are some of the things that they would do? And what do you recommend folks do? Like if they're the top three things that maybe an aspiring entrepreneur should be thinking about as they're getting into this world of business?
Those at the start of a game, I mean, they're in the perfect position if you know, if they follow the right advice. And unfortunately, a lot of people listen to it, but then kind of go against it. And I put myself in that bracket too. But the, I suppose the big cliche, first of all, is to just have a little bit of conviction and to start. People quite often will put things off and, you know, try and do the business plan and try and always plan and plan and plan. But what I learned time and time again was, you know what, until you start something, it's just an idea. And although ideas are great, they don't exactly put food on the table or anything else like that. So the thing which I heard probably more often than not was, I wish I'd started sooner, or at least I wish I'd believed in myself sooner and put a little bit, you know, more onto the table, and instead of just acting like an amateur for so long. I suppose number two on the list there would be to just spend a little bit of time to actually figure out what it is you want from this. If you're going to start a business, like, why? Like, what is it that you want? And take the time to think, is this for me, or am I going after this because I think that is the done thing? Like, why do I want, you know, to live in this part of the world? Or why do I want this kind of house or car? Like, does that actually matter to you? If it does, that is fine. There's nothing wrong with fancy cars and clothes and everything like that, but it has to be for you. And I think if you take a little bit more time to define what success and failure and the happiness and the freedom and everything like that, what they actually mean to you, the sooner you do that, the better you're putting your foot forward for, you know, not just months down the line, but years and decades. Mm-hmm. And I think the third thing I would like to kind of touch upon, I just had it in my head and it's just kind of gone out right now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So it comes, oh man, all the time. So it comes to, it focuses around hiring. And I think everyone probably needs to make some kind of hiring mistake. Like, it is going to happen. I have heard every kind of hiring story, mistake, the good, the bads possible. And it never kind of gets easier, whether you're hiring online, offline, virtual, whatever. So I think you need to start off knowing that you're going to make a couple of bad hires. And in order to build a really good culture and to figure out the kind of business that you want to grow, you're probably going to just have to start hiring someone. So you have a better idea if it is what you want your culture to be like, because you need a couple of bad eggs before that kind of filters on through. So yeah, I think those are kind of the three things where if I ask people, like, okay, what would you do if you started again? But like, I wish I'd have started sooner. I wish I'd have taken the time to figure out what, you know, success and happiness and what means me, like, what is my why and what is my what. Mm-hmm. And then the third one is just like hire. Like, the first hires are always going to be hard, but you know what? The 20th or the 30th hires are hard too. And the sooner you realize what kind of hire is best for your business, because each one is different, the better and easier your life is going to be.
Yeah, no, I think that makes perfectly good sense. And so, you know, I guess I'm just kind of curious here. When you talk about business in general, I mean, Morgana, you've run a number of businesses, I mean, all sort of in this money space, right?
Yeah.
So is this like, was this the first true entrepreneurial venture for you, or did you do something else from an entrepreneurial perspective before?
I think I started out after college and after being really bad as an employee. and then I moved back to my hometown of L.A. and I was an actress. And that was actually my first introduction to being an entrepreneur.
Wait, were you in anything we know? Like anything? Like, were you in like something popular?
I was, no.
Rich was in CSI. What was it, CSI? What were you in?
I was in just goofball stuff.
Yeah. Nothing, goofball stuff.
Invisible Man, a couple different, yeah.
But you carried a gun.
Yeah.
Whoa. That's cool, man.
I was in Diagnosis Murder and an episode of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Really? Oh, man, we're going to have to look for that one. We're going to have to bring that one up over at the break. That's fun. And so, but obviously
that
you learned a lot.
That taught me marketing.
Yeah.
That taught me marketing. And I started out coaching other people in the entertainment industry and doing a much better job for them than I was for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I quit acting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, from my perspective, there's a lot of ways to make money in the world, and probably trying to be an actor. I mean, Rich, you were down that road. And
it's
Morgan,
the,
I mean, it's...
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, it's... Not.
I mean, when you're trying to apply for jobs you don't even really want, you just got to get it on your resume for the next thing. That's just, you screw you. You're walking out of there. It's just, it's not fun.
All right. Well, fortunately, we all have moved into this entrepreneurial space where we're hopefully not making a lot of mistakes, and certainly not looking at things as successful mistakes. But that is how Matthew's looking at things, and we'll be talking more with Matt Turner here about The Successful Mistake on Reinvention Radio right after this.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're in a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, then the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Olscher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step-by-step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many people get on the right path and clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step to realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting thereinventionworkshop.com today. No more delays. No more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to thereinventionworkshop.com today. That's thereinventionworkshop.com.
Looking to be a successful entrepreneur? The virtual assistant industry continues to be a top choice for those looking to start their own business. The problem can be how to become a virtual assistant. Many turn to the Bible of the VA industry, the book, Virtual Assistant, the series, and it's the perfect guide for office managers, executive assistants, and other administrative professionals looking to make the transition from employee to successful business owner. Go to vatheseries.com to get your copy today.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Olscher.
And welcome back to another edition, yay, of Reinvention Radio. White Way to the rescue. Yeah, man, you just like, that was, I got to tell you, dude, I'm a little bit nervous for you. You know, it's like in the Midwest when it snows, like, for the first time. And you get like those like 75, 80, not that you're 75 already, but you get like those 75, 80-year-old guys who are going, oh, go on now, shovel the snow, honey. Ah! And then like the first snow and they die. And then it's like a really sad winter for everybody. That was like, I was worried that you ran in here so fast, man. I was kind of concerned.
I thought I'd be able to do a ninja flip over the table and push up the slider, but it didn't quite pull that off.
The sour cream and onion potato chips from Lay's. Thank you very much to our sponsor, Frito-Lay, for bringing another bag of sour cream and onion. Potato chips for us there. We really do appreciate that. All right, we're talking to Matthew Turner, and we're. It's funny. I want to call you like the Slumdog Millionaire, but it's actually a Turndog thing, and it's what is it? Turndog.co, and I find it like really really interesting because in trying to figure out a little bit more about you know who you are, Matt, and so on, you go to your about section on your page. And, like, as a writer, you would think, like, this would be, like, an extensive, like, biography of all the things that you've done. It's like, check back soon. We'll be sharing interesting details or something like that. So, I mean, if it took you 4 years to write the book, I'm scared of how long it's going to take you to finish that website, man. It could be a while. So
is it working? But you are like the third person to mention it. It's last week. No one's mentioned it for months, and three people in 1 week. So, yeah, I am on it. It's more just the visual. The content side of things is pretty much done. So, yeah, I do need to get that done. I feel like, I'm the website
now designer it's all good,
who
man.
Doesn't have a website. So,
it's all good. But let me ask you a question, and then I'm going to turn it over to Morgana because I know she's got a few questions as well for you. But let me ask you this. I mean, the book, why? I mean, really, like, why did you write the book? And frankly, I mean, 4 years is a long – I mean, like, for aspiring authors out there, they hear, like, Jesus, 4 years – and you may actually turn some people off to, like, writing because that's a long time. Why did you write the book, and why do you think it took you so long to write it?
Well, you have to remember, I mean, it wasn't like I was writing for 4 years solid, you know. It was very much a side project, too. I was doing other things. But the actual interviewing process with 160-odd people took, it was around about sort of 2 years of that time. And I've written novels before. I've written lots of other things, but this was a completely different kind of project. So it required me to learn new skills, really, and it really challenged me from a writing point of view. So it took probably twice as long to get the actual sort of structuring and the sort of note taking and the writing side of things more than it would writing any other book. So it's been an amazing learning process for that. And that is basically why it took 4 years. It's not like it took me 4 years to write just the book. Once I kind of got into the swing of things, it was sort of 6-7 months, which is around about how long it would take me to write a normal book. So that's why it took so long. It certainly shouldn't put people off. I mean, I feel there's a lot of writers these days who they like the idea of, you know, just getting pen onto paper and getting something out within a couple of months. But I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, taking your time on something and it becoming a bit of a labor of love. I feel like there's a bit of a lost art there, and it's become a real passion. And because it's taken me so long, it's taught me even more about not just what it means to be a writer and an entrepreneur and the various relations that I've had with people, but, you know, the journey that you take. So, in terms of why I did it, I was a new entrepreneur and I was scared of making mistakes and I didn't really know where to turn. And I thought, you know what? This is the kind of book I need to read. So I should be the one to write it. And along the way, I'm sure I'll meet a lot of amazing people. And that's what happened.
So what was your biggest mistake writing the book?
My biggest mistake was surrounded by, you know, the actual outreach. I did a pretty good job of connecting with new people. I mean, I started a book where I had a very small network, didn't really know anyone. So for a good 18 months, 2 years, I did a pretty decent job of meeting new people like Steve and like everyone else. And I did an all right job at connecting and getting them on board on a Skype call to chat. But I did a terrible job of nurturing these relationships and trying to turn them into friendships. And I think it goes back to what we were talking earlier, this notion of quality over quantity. I've always liked to think that I'm a quality kind of guy, but I, for a long time, you know, the proof in the pudding, I was all about quantity. So I did a pretty good job of connecting, did nothing when it came to nurturing. And as I got closer to, you know, wanting to sort of crowdfund things and to, you know, start exposing the book and get on things like podcasts and just everything else as I was writing the book, I found it harder to gain momentum than I thought I would, because I figured, hey, I've got all these people who feature in the book, they're going to be invested, right? And I realized that wasn't the case.
People you hadn't spoken to in 4 years.
Not necessarily 4 years, but yeah, some of them a year, where maybe I'd only spoken to them like once or twice in a year. And I don't think that's a good way to kind of build any kind of relationship or friendship, you know, be it personal or business. So, yeah, I mean, none of my interviews are quite that sort of stale where I've not spoken to someone for 4 years, at least not through trying. But yeah, for a lot of them, the majority of them, unfortunately, became stale over several months. And it taught me a great deal about, you know, actually what it means to properly connect with people. It's not just getting them on an initial Skype call, it's fair, and actually giving a damn and helping them, being generous, you know, weeks, months, years down the line.
So in connecting with these people is moving you into maybe an area you weren't normally comfortable with. So with a couple of minutes left in the segment, I'm curious if you would encourage people to look beyond their comfort zone. For instance, you wrote fiction from what I picked up. Then you moved into nonfiction. So you're still kind of doing the same thing, but you're pushing out vertically or horizontally into areas that you're unfamiliar with. But it sounds like you would encourage everyone to do that because success can be found there.
Absolutely. I can't really imagine a life without challenge. I don't feel like, you know, complacency is a good thing. It's a bit of a killer in general. It's not to say that if you find a skill and you find that, you know, you're good at something and it works, to then leave it and go, oh, I found something that works, I should leave this and look on to another challenge. You know, by all means, continue to always think about, you know, if you've got a strength, use it to your advantage. But I think there's a lot to be said about trying to, you know, challenge yourself, push yourself. As a writer, as a creative, I always like to think that my next book, my next piece of work is going to be better than my last. And the only way I'll do that is by trying to just push the boat a little bit further. And that doesn't necessarily have to mean, you know, involving more people. Like people might think, oh, well, that means he's going to try and do 200 people next time. No, it might be just that, you know, the challenge would be trying to actually only do 30 people, but going to do it face to face. And rather than just successful people, what if, you know, I set the benchmark as people who had a minimum, you know, X amount of worth or had a business, you know, so that would be a challenge. And I think as long as you're able to keep pushing the boundary in that sense and challenging yourself, it's going to, yeah, it's bound to lead to some forms of success, or if not success, experience and knowledge. Mm-hmm. And like I say, I can't imagine a life without that.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Well, really do appreciate you sharing all that wisdom here on Reinvention Radio. And if you want more information about the book, The Successful Mistake. Definitely encourage you to take a look at that on Amazon, and then you can get more information at turndog.co. That's .co as well. Interesting. And so, Wade, as an entrepreneur, man, you've been doing things for a long, long, long time. What's the single biggest mistake you've learned from over the years as an entrepreneur?
Oh my goodness.
All right, time's up. Rich. All right, so
hold on. With credit to Rich, everything's going to take longer and cost more than you think.
Wow. Rich, in other words, you cost exactly. more and you're slower.
Get your checkbook out.
Than what he wants you to be.
Add a comma.
Oh, man. All right, Margano, for you. Well, biggest lesson learned.
Not charging more sooner.
Ooh, undervaluing your expertise.
Yeah.
What'd you say? Add a comma, right?
Yeah.
Add a comma. I like that. Okay. So for me, it's, I don't know. There's been so many. As a matter of fact, here's what I recommend. If you pick up a copy of The Successful Mistake, you will learn all about Steve Ulscher's Successful Mistake. That's all I got. All right. So there we go. All right. So very cool. So Rich, anything really for us as we close here? 6 seconds? Anything? Get it.
Listen more.
Download. All right. For those of you who've been rating and subscribing and reviewing to the podcast, we do appreciate that. Listening live. Appreciate you joining us here on WSRadio.com. I'm Steve Ulscher for White Wade, Rich Ote, Murray Goulet, and Morgana Ray. Ooh, it all rhymes. We'll talk to you guys next time here on Reinvention Radio. Thanks, guys.
You just got dismantled. Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Ulscher, visit ReinventionRadio.com.